Hi, it's James. Got to apologise. We've had some technical difficulties here at the Angry Beanie Bunker. So, sorry about the delay in this getting this episode out. So let's get into it. The guest for this episode of Women in STEM is someone who's come from a bit of a different start than our previous guests. Dr. Tiklum Nguyen is the Research Centre Manager for the Monash Centre for Atomically Thin Materials, or MACATM. Might need to work on that acronym. Anyway, Dr. Nguyen's science focus is on the development of new nanomaterials, but that's not all she's interested in, having worked in Vietnamese language radio and developing her skills in lab management. Who would have thought that scientists could be complex human beings, huh?
Yeah, well, in my case, I wasn't really exposed to science until high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in Vietnam and did my primary school there. And the subjects that we learned at the time were math, literature, history, and physical education.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't any science subject. There was an art subject. Nothing fancy, like, you know, you do painting and stuff, but, you know, just drawing with pencils, and we did embroidery. I remember that. But, no science until much later when I came to Australia. So I finished year seven in Vietnam, knew nothing about science, and even the scientific curiosity, it wasn't even in my radar. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, being in a third world country, you worry more about what you're going to eat the next day rather than, you know, something very far-fetched and very out there, like new technologies, and be curious about how things work. I wasn't really curious about that at the time. So my dad was one of the millions of boat people who escaped Vietnam and coming to Australia, or risking their lives, hop into the boat, and finding a new country, finding new freedom, and finding a future for themselves. So I grew up with just my mom taking care of us, and mm-hmm. I didn't really know my dad until we came to Australia, and I was 12 at the time.
That must have been a big shock for you.
Yeah. So if you think learning a new concept, you know, any new concept is difficult, try doing that in a totally, completely foreign language.
And a completely foreign society as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't know anybody. You couldn't really understand the teacher, what they were trying to teach you at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I wasn't the only one like that, because at the time there were many other people also coming from, you know, different backgrounds. There was from Croatian or Romanians who also new to Australia, and they were, you know, going through the same experience. There were also many other Vietnamese friends as well at the time. So it was okay. And we had a lot of supporting teachers at my high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing okay. But I think my exposure to science was until year nine that mm-hmm. I had my first fascination with science. And it was actually with chemistry in particular. So our science teacher asked us to go out onto the school yard and pick flowers around the school. So we brought them back into the classroom, and we did a distillation experiment to extract all the essential oil from the petals. And we made perfume at the end of the session.
Oh, very
nice. It was probably just mainly, you know, solvents that we had in the end. But we were basically learning the process of making perfume. And I was really fascinated with that. So that's when it really clicked for me that we can use science to, you know, transform something so simple like flower petals into luxurious products like perfume.
Mm.
And that's when I really paid more attention to science, and then realized that, you know, chemistry is everywhere. Chemistry controls how our body functions, you know, in digesting food, in fighting bacteria and viruses. And we deal with chemistry every single day, you know, through process of cooking our food, cleaning our clothes, or taking medication when we're sick, for example. So I think that's the time when I thought, you know, it would be really cool to be, you know, a pharmacist, or to make new drugs so that you can treat, you know, new, you can treat diseases and illnesses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I knew I wanted to do chemistry for my high school certificate.
It was more the practical aspects of science than the theoretical that attracted you.
That's right. That's right. So I just saw the practicality of, you know, this chemistry is everywhere, and we can use chemistry to explain so many different things that we, you know, normally take for granted. And it was the practical aspect of it that got me into science in the first place. Yeah, so I took the typical route, chose maths, methods, chemistry and physics in year 11 and 12. But I soon found out that it was actually really, really hard. You know, being fascinated and wanting to learn is one thing. Mm. But when you're trying to learn and pick up a new scientific language while you're still trying to understand English, it was a huge challenge for me at the time.
I had enough trouble understanding chemistry in high school, and English is my first language, so don't worry about that.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, but I actually failed chemistry in year 11.
Ooh.
So I passed all the other subjects, but I failed chemistry, and it was a big hit for me.
Mm.
But it was also lucky for me at the time, because I did high school. I did year 11 and 12 in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
In the Queensland high school system, they didn't really count the year 11 results mm-hmm. into your university entry score. So I tried extra hard in year 12. And graduated high school with a pretty good score, so I felt pretty good with myself, you know, having to overcome that huge challenge.
Mm.
And I was accepted into UQ to do a Bachelor of Science, but our family decided to move back to Melbourne, so I chose to do a Bachelor of Applied Science, Applied Chemistry at RMIT. I think because I failed chemistry once, I have this motivation to, you know, conquer my weakness. And my thinking at the time was that doing an applied course would also get you to a job quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to do applied chemistry at RMIT.
So what area of chemistry? What area of chemistry draws you? You've said you know it governs everything, and chemistry is. I mean, we're basically walking bags of chemical reactions. But what is it about? Mm. What areas of chemistry specifically attracted you?
I think it was the making of things that we use every day, you know, from medicine to cleaning agents to paints that in the paint that we use to paint our house or in petrochemical that we use to fuel our cars. So just really practical things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I mean, the last chemical experiment I did was I wanted to make my own biodiesel. So.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I decided to do it out the backyard, and I made a litre of biodiesel and then promptly forgot all about it. So when you got to uni, how did you go?
I actually did really well in uni. I was on the dean's list and received certificates for academic achievements 2 years. And I graduated with first class honours, but I think it was during my honours year that I discovered a passion for research.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed my research project at the time, and it was synthesizing a compound. I actually don't remember what the compound was used for, but it was the process of the research project, because you're making things, you're making something new. And that was what I enjoyed most.
It's, more the journey
it's the
than
making
the,
of things.
More
exactly,
the journey?
And all the,
yeah.
Uh-huh, and the trial and error of finding the right recipe to make this thing. So for me, chemistry is like cooking, and I love cooking. And it's like testing, you know, how you can use ingredients in different ways.
Mm.
And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But that's the cool thing about research, right, because you don't know what you may discover, you know, the next corner. And, and that's really fascinating for me. So after third year, I also did a summer scholarship to do a short 3 month project at ANU, and that's when I really discovered what it's like to work in a research lab at the university. And it was also in a chemistry lab, so, and also in synthetic lab as well. So I really enjoyed just the practicality of making new compounds and making new things using your chemistry knowledge. So my honor supervisor was great. I think I owe all of my research career to him. It was Dr. Colin Ricks at RMIT. And he was really encouraging in terms of always scoping out opportunities for us and, mm-hmm. and encouraged me to apply for scholarships and things like that. And I applied anyway, but didn't think it was, you know, I would get it or anything like that. But I ended up with an APA to do postgraduate research. And so I took that up, and I think I was really lucky because around about the same time, nanoscience and nanotechnology was really emerging, and there was lots of research in the area at the time. And there was the CRC for microtechnology, so it's a cooperative research center, but targeted for microtechnology. They were offering top-up scholarships to PhD students. Mm-hmm. So I took up the opportunity and started a PhD project to explore new materials for gas sensors. So okay. That's my first experience with nanoscience.
So what about so how did you go from being a chemistry nut to nanomaterials? So what was the attraction? The project, was it just the project, or just was there something else?
Well, the project I was working on is actually not that far from chemistry. It was still using chemistry knowledge, mm-hmm. but you're now working with materials that are much smaller in size, basically. Yeah. So I was still doing a lot of synthesizing. Mm-hmm. I was still doing synthesis. I was still making things. I was still, you know, exploring new methods to make these materials.
You're still cooking your recipes.
So it wasn't too... Exactly. Yeah, and getting burnt along the way.
Yes.
I was doing what I love to do.
Now, you did that for 8 years. What, I mean, so you this original project, but what drew you more into it?
My PhD was for 4.5, I think. Mm-hmm. And then it was my postdoc at Melbourne Uni that was for about 8 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I, after my PhD, I was actually at the crossroads. I didn't know whether I should, you know, go into industry, find a job, get mm-hmm. earn an income, or doing a research project. So you sort of apply for everything.
Sorry, just interrupt. That's an interesting decision you had to make, where you could either do research or earn an income.
Well, you had to earn income some way.
Yes.
And I was open for whatever opportunity that's out there.
Exactly.
And doing research was one of them. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't really care about, you know, how much income you would earn being, you know, doing research, or how much you would earn doing, you know, working in the industry. Yep. I just wanted a job. but it was actually really hard. Mm-hmm. I think I was selected for an interview for 2 or 3 times.
Yep.
And none of those was successful. And it took me a good 6-7 months to actually find a position in research. So in the meantime, I was actually in retail. I had a retail job at a mobile phone shop.
Yep.
But it was an actual waste. You know, I learned, I did, my job at the retail shop was bookkeeping. So mm-hmm. I learned about accounting, and I learned about, you know, how a business run. I learned about profit and loss and things like that. And then my second retail job mm-hmm. was working for an optometrist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you learn sales and marketing and stock taking and things like that. So everything that you learn along the way, it's never wasted.
Now, you didn't just you didn't just work in retail. You also did some work as a radio show host, I see.
Oh, that was more like volunteer rather than work.
So was that for a Vietnamese language radio station?
It was, yeah. I was very in touch with the Vietnamese community at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was actually during my PhD years that I discovered, you know, other skills and abilities through extracurricular activities. So I was president for the Vietnamese Student Association, mm-hmm. and so we work with a team of volunteers, so all of us were volunteers, and we basically just organize activities that are fun and that are beneficial to our community. So we organized events like fundraising for charity, camps for students, sports competitions, mm-hmm. Musical concerts. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And it was really challenging to organize events when you don't really have a budget. So it involved a lot of, you know, begging for free labor and begging for volunteers along the way. But it's from these experiences that you really pick up, you know, your interpersonal skills, mm-hmm. negotiation skills, communications, teamwork, time management, because I had to, you know, do my PhD during the time as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually all of those that help shape me, the person I am today. And I'm using all of those skills in my current job as well.
Mm-hmm. So what is your current job at the moment?
My current role is running a research center at mm-hmm. Monash University. Yeah, so during my postdoc at Melbourne Uni, I did that for about 8 years. It's not a straightforward postdoc because I was sort of second in charge in our research group. Mm-hmm. My supervisor was he was a laureate fellow, an ARC laureate fellow, and it was very busy, and we had a large research group as well. I was second in charge when he's away. And so on top of the research that I do for my own research, as I was employed as a research-only staff.
Yep.
But you also do lab management, supervising students, doing tutoring for the school, doing outreach for mm-hmm. nanoscience at Melbourne Uni. So throughout all of that, I also did scientists in schools with the CSIRO, and I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed working with students and teachers, and you know, you get a chance to showcase what nanoscience and nanotechnology does and how they contribute to, you know, everyday life and how they contribute to building new technology for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed, you know, just working with students and teachers on that. It was a really good program, and I really encourage anybody who is in science to participate. This is a great chance for you also to communicate what you're trying to do in your research to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So during my postdoc, that's when I realized that because I didn't have a chance to go overseas to do my postdoc, I wasn't as competitive as mm-hmm. Many other researchers. So I received small grants along the way to help me, you know, do various research projects, but nothing big. I couldn't get a fellowship or anything like that to establish my own, you know, research lab.
Yep.
So I was always doing other things rather than, you know, just 100% of my research. But I really enjoyed, you know, all of that experience. And then an opportunity came up to study Master of Management. So I applied and received a scholarship to do that. So it took me a while to do, because I was still working full time. So it took me 5 years, a good 5 years, to complete the study. But I did it in the end, and finished that at the end of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I had to make the decision, you know, do I stay in research or do I find another postdoc position, because my position was running out as well?
Yep.
Or do I, you know, utilize this opportunity to do completely different? And I make the jump to look for other roles, but mm-hmm. I still want to stay within science. I know that I really want to, you know, be in touch with research, and being in a university system would be a plus, because I really enjoyed working at a university. So I actually interviewed for industry roles as well, and I actually got accepted for the a lab management position at a pharmaceutical company.
Mm-hmm.
And but I turned that one down. It was really weird. I didn't have any other job offers.
Mm-hmm.
I was applying for a few things, but it was just the moment when you received the news that you got the job, and then mm-hmm. you were just like, oh, okay, I got it. You know, it was nothing like jumping up and down, but, you know, the feeling that, you know, this is really exciting.
It was more of okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, got it. It was kind of like that. So, yeah, after, you know, a long process of thinking and juggling, you know, maybe that's not what I really wanted to do. Because I think doing lab management at a company, you're just still in touch with the science, but you don't, I think you're, maybe you don't get the flexibility to do other things as well. And I think I've really enjoyed the diversity in my job. And I just felt that an industry environment wouldn't allow me to do that. Yeah, so I turned that down and then looked for other opportunities. And luckily, this one came up at Monash. They were establishing a new research center in atomically thin materials, which is really exciting. So I applied and I got it. And I think it's the best decision I've ever made. And it's one of the best jobs. I always thought, you know, I may miss research. And people ask if I miss doing research yet, but it's been a bit more than a year now, and I still really enjoy it.
So you still have that passion for science, though. It's not like you've just said, okay, I'm just going to be a lab manager. I'm not interested in science anymore, is it?
Well, not at all. In my current role, it's with my background in doing research and working with nanomaterials and being in the research environment that actually helped me to do, you know, my job well. So apart from managing the operations of the center, I also manage grants, do business development, building collaborations for our research, for our center members, and also, you know, marketing and showcasing what our center is trying to achieve as well along the way. So it's, I think it's still very much like what I was doing before in my postdoc, in a sense. I was
but now you've got the title to go to, and now you've got the title to go with it.
Exactly, and I don't have to, you know, apply for grants to support my position, which is another huge plus.
So, where would you like to be in, say, 10 years' time when you look back and say, "This is what I've achieved"?
You know what? I'm the sort of person who don't plan all that far in advance. And I think it's because of my background, you know, coming from a third world country. I've always just tried to look for new opportunities and, you know, better myself along the way, learn new skills and just be open for the opportunities that come up. And I think that's really helped me to be where I am at the moment. And it's just the being able to, you know, just take up new opportunities as they come along really, really, really helped me.
Awesome stuff.
So, yeah. So I think my next challenge is maybe managing a larger research center. Taking on more responsibilities, but in 10 years' time, I think that's a little bit too long to plan for.
Okay, so if you want to find out what the Monash Centre for Atomically Thin Materials actually does, then head along to www.monash.edu/atomically-thin-materials, and it's all explained there. Okay, as always, the music for this episode is Coca-Cola by Texas Radio Fish and is licensed Creative Commons Attribution. Of course, you can find it at dig.ccmixter.org. All right, hopefully we'll get the next one out without any too many hassles. I'll talk to you then. Oh, one more thing. If you know a woman in STEM who you think would be good for this podcast, let me know by dropping me an email at james@angrybeanie.com or pinging me on Twitter either on @PersaJ, that's P-U-I-S-E-R-J, or @AB4Science. All right, I'll speak to you later.